Welcome to Ancestral Medicine for Modern Times. My name is Dr. Jonathan Flores, and I'm happy to be your guide on this journey. I am a physician and shaman. For over 16 years, I have devoted my life to the shamanic healing studies with ayahuasca and San Pedro cactus. The work with patients from all over the world led me to create the SEET method, Comprehensive Emotional Therapy Method, which combines powerful native ancestral knowledge with modern life coaching techniques. Recovering your natural power, reconnecting with your instinct, breaking with all patterns that hold you back. Hi everyone, here I have a very special guest, Dr. Monica Williams. She is a board certified licensed clinical psychologist specializing in cognitive behavioral therapies. She is an associate professor in the School of Psychology at the University of Ottawa, Canada researcher in the mental health disparities, and director of the Laboratory for Cultural Mental Health Disparities. She is also the clinical director of the Behavioral Wellness Clinic, LLC, in Toland, Connecticut, and she has founded clinics in Kentucky, Virginia, and Pennsylvania. She is a university teacher, a speaker, scientific researcher, trainer for medical residents, author, founder of several mental health clinics among the USA. She has made so many contributions to racial inclusion in the academic field. And nowadays, she has become the voice of racial minorities in the field of psychedelics. Her resume and career are vast and immensely rich. Let's go meet her now. With us today, Dr. PhD Monica Williams. Welcome, Dr. Williams. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Also for us, Doctor. So now that you're really opening in this discussion about the people of color taking relevant roles in the academic field in general, and more specifically in this new career in research and psychedelic assisted therapies, as a person of color and also a woman, I assume that took your own place must not have been an easy task for you. What obstacles does a person of color face that the white man does not have to face?
Oh, that's a good question, because, you know, we face so many obstacles and it's not always obvious immediately what the problems are, because nobody ever comes to you and says, I'm going to exclude you because you're a woman, or, you know, we don't want you in our group because you're a person of color. Often it's just being excluded and ostracized and you don't know why. So I might find out a year later that several colleagues have worked together and put together a grant proposal and got a grant funded, and I wasn't invited to be a part of it, even though I had relevant experience. So these are some of the things that happen, you know, in the workplace because of the situation. And then oftentimes too in academic publishing, and I just wrote an article about this for Psychology Today, there's a lot of racism behind the scenes. So our articles and papers about race, racism, disparities, and so forth, they don't get the same consideration as other articles. So it takes a very long time to get these published compared to maybe articles. If I write articles that are about mostly white people, they get published right away. So this is an additional problem that comes from doing research about people of color in addition to being a person of color.
Well, and continue talking about this in this new career, the psychedelic assisted therapy. What do you think most people trained to perform this psychedelic assisted therapy are white, and there is no balance in contrast to people of color? If we start from the basis that this therapy precisely seeks to heal trauma from the main street wounded by injustice and abuse. So the first time I entered in contact with you is when I found an article that it was describing that all the studies done, for example, for psilocybin and MDMA, the trials was performed in white people, not in people of color. So all the conclusions there were is for white people, and all the people that is training in this psychedelic assisted therapy, it is white, and was no, and so So why is this happening?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. For one, there's a mythology about how psychedelic science started, and all of the gods in the pantheon are white men. So all the contributions of women and people of color are erased. So people think that white men invented the field. So there's also an attraction for more white people to be involved. People of color don't see themselves, and so they don't think that they're welcome, or they think psychedelics are for white people. So there's not as much interest or engagement. And then also in the United States, there's the war on drugs, which has caused a lot of mass incarceration of Black and brown communities using the excuse of drugs. And so many people of color are afraid to have anything to do with drugs that are considered illegal or illicit because of the greater risk of going to jail and all the bad consequences that come with that.
Yeah. But now this is changing now, thanks to all these studies. Now I have followed the MAPS news, and they are working with a lot of acceptance with the FDA.
Yes, so it's becoming, more mainstream now, but I think it's going to take a little longer before many communities of color accept psychedelics, because there's just already been so much stigma for so long. It's going to take longer for people there to feel like this is something that they want to do or try. Although certainly there are pockets of people of color everywhere, that are enthusiastic about psychedelics. The problem is because these therapies have been focused on the experiences of white people, and they've been mostly developed by white people, for white people, written about by white people. There's a lot of gaps in terms of how well these are going to work for people of color. And so it's not always a fit. You can take this therapy that you learned about for white people and you bring it to different ethnic groups, and it might not resonate for them for different reasons. And then on top of that, there may be traumas that come up for people, from cultural traumas, historical trauma, community trauma, due to racism over the generations. These things can come up when someone is having a psychedelic experience. And most therapists don't know what to do with that when that happens, because they have no experience or training with it.
Wow, it's incredible, this. This was my next question. So what do you think about the idea that the ambassadors of a new order in mental health therapies should work to resolve their own traumas before leading others to psychedelic experience?
Yeah, well, I think that's a good idea. I mean, the problem is I think everybody has their own kinds of traumas. I think childhood is just traumatic anyway. And so all of us who do psychotherapies, we all know that you have to kind of work on your own stuff so it doesn't spill onto other people. The problem is that Western culture, and not just Western culture, many nations all over the world have deep wounds around race, ethnicity, ethnic conflict, colorism, and these wounds are unhealed. So when you're working with people around these issues, if you have these unhealed wounds, you can end up re-wounding people in the process of trying to help them.
I was referring, yes, it is true. I was referring in the field of getting deep into the psychedelic sessions, the therapist itself, because the game changing in this psychedelic therapies is that there is something with the medicine of the psychedelic that is not only you can learn it by book or by an essay or by an article. So you need to experience to know, for example, how to guide or lead properly, or sea, like honestly, a person that is going through a journey of psilocybin or MDMA, no?
Yeah, this is definitely the prevailing thought among, the community, is that the therapists and guides should have had their own psychedelic experiences. because the thought is that, well, how can you guide someone in terrain you have never traveled, right? Uh-huh. So this is the thought. I don't know if I'm quite as strict as some people in this, because I do know some therapists that I think will be very good at this work, even though maybe for medical reasons they have not been able to do this. But I think in general, it's definitely an important thing to do.
And another question. I have a shamanic background. I have a 16 years working with the ayahuasca and also with the San Pedro. They have a mescaline, and so I work with mescaline and DMT, let's say in a scientific way. And I have found, so in the shamanic practice, the therapist or the shaman or the medicine man always take the medicine when he's working with the patient. What are your thoughts about, for example, the psychedelic therapist that is working with a patient taking also a little from psilocybin, for example, during the guiding the process?
Yeah, well, I think it's a bit different when you're working, you know, shamanically or religiously with someone. I think it makes a lot of sense to take some of the medicine with them so that you can join in their journey in a way. But unfortunately, the way that that things work for people like myself, like in psychology and licensed professions, is that this would be considered very unethical, because it would be seen as you're kind of doing this for yourself and you're not then fully present for your client because you're having your own journey. Now, you know, now maybe the idea of taking a little bit to help connect with them, I can definitely see some potential benefit in that, but I don't see that ever being something that would be considered acceptable or ethical in my profession, although who knows, things can change.
So what is the future for you, in your view, for this assisted therapy of people of color?
Yeah, well, so for me personally, I feel like there's still so much work to do, because even just outside of psychedelics, we have a whole mental health workforce that has not been well trained in working with diverse people. And for example, in the United States now, half of all children, half of all births are people of color. So we have to be better able to respond to those needs. And I'm in Canada now, and because of immigration, the population is very rapidly changing in terms of demographic, but yet still the vast majority of psychologists, people in my profession, are white. We went to school and we were taught to be really great therapists for white people. And this has to change across the board. But I think it's especially important with psychedelics, because I think that when people are in that vulnerable state of being, you know, under the influence of the substance, they may be more vulnerable in some ways. And we want to make sure that the therapists are not doing any harm and that they're facilitating healing as much as they can. So it's kind of become, you know, my mission in some ways to both diversify the people who are able to do psychedelic therapy, so bring more people into education and training, so that as this unrolls, there are diverse people already. And at the same time, better train everybody to work with the cultural issues that are going to come up for people. So there's a lot of work to do there. I'm starting an expanded access site with MAPS for MDMA at my clinic in Connecticut, and we're going to be focusing on people who've experienced racial traumas. So we will have some pilot data on how that treatment has worked for these folks and sort of what sort of cultural issues were important to consider in that process. And so that'll be published and made available to the larger therapeutic community for consideration when they do their work. But ultimately, we want to have some bigger trials with bigger numbers of people, because we'll need those for for quantitative analysis that we can then publish and have something a little more solid to guide the plans going forward.
Wow. You mentioned something very interesting about the cultural teaching of the of the racism. You say it is even in the mind of the people in color. So how do you think it is possible to re-educate or guide parents who have already established the white supremacy in their homes, and they're educating their children in that belief system overlapping racism?
Yeah. So if I understand you correctly, you're saying, you know, what about people who are already have this white supremacy in their hearts, and they're raising their children this way too?
Yes.
Can they change? Yes, they need to change. and it starts with really taking a kind of a fearless moral inventory of yourself, looking on the inside. And I think psychedelics can help people with this journey, because one of the things that's so challenging about it is people have a lot of internal defenses against acknowledging their own racism. But the issue is everybody has racism, because we're in a racist society and you get it from everywhere. So it's kind of impossible not to be influenced in some way. And so the first step is being willing to admit that we're all influenced this way, so that we can start identifying things that we do and attitudes that we have and change them. And then also teach our children that explicitly. Don't just hope that they pick it up magically, but we have to be like constantly reinforcing, you know, these pro-social values, because we're always combating against the negative messages that are coming through like the television and social media.
Yeah, it's part of the system.
Yes.
At least known, one of the most healing characteristics of psychedelics is that they teach us to see the world from a new perspective. They allow us to get out of our belief system and open us to new possibilities that we did not contemplate before. Do you think it would be possible to train therapists to use psychedelics as a tool to cure racism in people?
Oh, I think that this is really an exciting question. I think so. I really think so. I don't know that anybody's really done this at least in any kind of documented or systemic way, but I kind of have this fantasy about doing, you know, some kind of, you know, encounter group or retreat focused around like healing your own inner racism, you know, as an anti-racism intervention involving psychedelics. So, I've brought this up a few times, and so many people have said to me, I'll be the first to sign up. Because I think it really could be a fantastic tool for that purpose.
Yes, me too. It is especially in the dissolving ego part, when it separates you for everything. So, you know, it connects you with everything, no? Psychedelics create the bond, natural bond that we have with everything, with us, with the world, with life, with people, with animals, with plants.
Oh, exactly. Which is why I think that, you know, it's like a perfect medium. And I mean, even people, you know, like myself, even people of color like me, you know, I grew up with racist messages, even in my own home. You know, when I was a little girl, I remember my grandmother, you know, she would brush my hair and my sister's hair and my cousin's hair. And she would always make comments like, oh, you have good hair. And oh, she has bad hair because it's so curly. And you know, so even like these little messages from childhood are absorbed and need to be purged out.
Yes. It's incredible, no, how these little words can really hit us deeply.
Right, right. Yeah.
So, I want to share you some story, a delicate story that I have and I will not like to be taking this as an arrogant, but I had an issue with maps, not an issue directly with maps. I received from a friend that is studying he's a medical doctor and he's already a psychiatrist, and he's in contact with me. And he mentioned me that there was a university opening a huge, a new career that was assisted psychedelic therapist. No? So this was the CIST university. And you know, in California, this university,
yeah,
that is MAPS and CIST.
Yes, yes.
And I did the form, I sent my email, I sent everything. And after a couple, this was the last year, no, for entering this 2020. And what it happened is that I received an email that I will have an interview. They are setting to have this interview. And when I have this interview, this person did this interview, not in an office. He was a doctor, did it in a coffee shop. There was a lot of noise. It was really strange. And when he did the interview, he didn't ask me about my shamanic or my experience with patient or about my work as a medical doctor or why I want to go there. So, you know, he was asking me about what is the recipe of how I cook ayahuasca? What was how I do the diet? What is my method with the diet? Ask me about another healing centers here in South America, in Ecuador, where I live, how they do, how they work, if I know them. And I even asked him, and I say, I cannot talk about the work of others. So I'm here to talk about me wanting to go and learn the path that you're creating for the academic field in psychoanalysis. I cannot talk about if the other one is a good healer, not healer, or the recipe. I didn't answer this question. So I cannot answer you the recipe of the medicine I work or the diet I do. And then he asked me, okay, let's talk about your shadow. What is your biggest shadow? And I said, I have a list, you know, of things, you know, that we can work, but it was so strong, you know, for me, and strange, and all the noisy of the coffee shop. So I have a question. I didn't know all about this racism. Even I present myself as a person of color, because I'm not black, I'm not white, I am a mix of I believe there is a black in me, and even a Chinese inside of me. So I'm a mix of everything. So I apply for a person of color.
Yeah.
But I felt kind of a rejection there, or like not professional academic in this moment. When this happened for something like me, where should a person go who has had an experience like mine and needs to advise about it? So what if there is a foreign medical doctor or shaman that wants to go to enter to this program to become more professional or to enter in this new research field, and this happened to him or to her, what would be the advice for this person?
Yeah, that's an unfortunate story. And this isn't the first story like this that I've heard from people of color who've been trying to get into this and feel like there's resistance because of who they are or how they look. And I think it's important not to give up and to keep pushing forward, because oftentimes people act in these ways. A lot of times they're not even aware that they're being racist, even though they are. And so I think it's a little hard for people who are from other countries and cultures, because, you know, you don't always exactly know like the systems and like who to talk to and how to talk to them, because there's all these like nuances about how we talk about race and racism. And like, you're allowed to talk about people of color, but you're not allowed to talk about white people. And it just doesn't make any sense. So I think like the best thing to do is to like sit back when something like this happens, like journal about it, like write about it and organize your thoughts and decide like what went wrong and how should it have gone and how would you have liked it to go and why do you think it should have gone that way? And then write what happened in a way that you might present it to someone, have someone else look at it for you and give their thoughts and input. And then I would take that and I would go to the person above them, maybe the director of the program, and say, hey, you know, I had a negative experience. I'd like to talk to you about it because I'm sure that doesn't represent your whole program. And then go over what your thoughts, because you have them written down, which is good, so you don't lose train of thought, because it's so sometimes hard to to know exactly what to say in these situations and go over it with them. And I would say that would be the first step, because oftentimes the people in charge don't know what other people under them are doing. They don't necessarily know that maybe you got an interviewer who had his own biases, or that something impacted you in a negative way because you're a person of color, because maybe like a white person wouldn't have detected it. So I would say that'd be the first step. And usually I've had good luck with that approach. And then if that doesn't work, then there's other things you can do and either continue to go up the chain or engage in some sort of peaceful activism about the problem. How does that sound?
Yeah. Sounds a lot of paperwork, but it's part of the system.
Part of the process.
Part of the process. Doctor, I have one more question about, have you gone through the experience in the psychedelic assisted therapy? Have you your psilocybin pill?
I have not had psilocybin in an official psychedelic therapy capacity, but I have had MDMA as part of a training program through MAPS, where you get, as a healthy volunteer, you get the MDMA in the same setting that that patients would get it, with the two therapist protocol and all the screening and the eye shades and everything. So I've been through that. And I've also had ketamine for therapy training sessions as well. And last year, I actually went to Costa Rica and had an ayahuasca retreat, which was also part of a training.
Wow, that's very necessary.
Yeah,
it's very. And another question about the: have you seen in all this research that they are working with shamans also? Because shamans has already like 5,000 years of heritage working with the psychedelics. The white researchers are just beginning, just like we can talk from 1942 from Hoffman with the LSD that introduced us to the white people into this area of psychedelics. But in the shamanic background, they have used like ayahuasca, for example, for their like 5,000 or 4,000 years, more or less. If there is shaman working now with the research, and why not? If there is not, why not? They are not using people that already is working with a tool, long time ago, working with communities, working with people, helping with the disease, and having a lot of experience.
Yeah, no, and you're absolutely right, because a lot of cultures have been using psychedelics for hundreds or thousands of years and have a lot of things figured out that in the West we're still just scratching the surface. And I know there's so much wisdom there, and I think that our academic and medical systems would be enriched by learning more about this. But one problem is that these traditional systems are very imbued with spiritual and religious themes, and in science, as particularly like medical science, psychological science, they don't like to mix these together. They want to just sort of like, strip all that out and just really like look at the molecules that are that they think are causing the healing. And I think that this is a little bit reductionist, because I see, and I think many of us see more of a kind of a holistic thing happening along with the medicine and the therapy and the caring and, the spiritual piece of it, all working together, with something like ayahuasca. But I think that in terms of Western science, they're not really ready to think about the role of spirituality, because they don't really understand it or know how to measure it. So I think that this is a little bit of an obstacle as far as that goes, but I think it is very important. And I think we are all enriched by learning more about it.
I did the Congress that you participate also now in this in 2020 in Canada. And there was a doctor for me was the best presentation, also how she described, I don't remember her name. I believe she's Elizabeth. She's from England and she's working in London, in the London University. She's blonde. Well, and she talked about their steps. They're working in the therapy. The acceptance. I don't remember. There is an E part, that is the environment. And she ends like in the experience they have working with the psilocybin in people with depression, that after 6 months, most of they have found that the medicine, one session works very good. But then after 6 months, they have been that they get connected again with the depression. So they start studying and they observe that the psilocybin assisting therapy, it have to go with the creation of a tribe, of a new tribe, because people go with this new awareness and get out of this hole or this place where they were not able to get out from this loop, but they go again to the same home with the parents, with the family, with the same system, with the neighbor, and they again get into that. So what she mentioned is that they have discovered that a people that work with assisted psychedelic therapy need to change their the family or the friendship circle they have where they come from, and they have to create a new one. So they are creating a new community of the people that are participating in these studies, to create a tribe of people that understand each other in this new way of seeing life and connecting. So at the end, I asked a question and I said I couldn't ask her because she has to go, and I will ask it to you. So they have found that what is already working in the communities, in the Indian communities, you find that the way that psychedelic therapies work there is because they are hold into an environment that supports it and accept this new vision of healing, of openness, of connection, of respect, you know, and of a community, of a whole, of a oneness, you know, let's say, you know, as a community of one race, not separation, no? So it's the same what has been, so at the end, so what's going to happen with these therapies, if we continue working as a scene, as a molecule, as a something that helps you to trigger some hormones, serotonin, dopamine, etc. And then at the end, so we need a human touch, and we need a family, we need a new community, we need to hold this in a reality, so creating this new reality. So what's going to happen? How this challenge is going to be faced by the scientific field if they are still wanting to separate what makes us human and not a couple of, I don't know, calcium and sodium, potassium, and water.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think this is a really important point, because at the end of the day, what most, I believe, as far as mental illness goes, what most people are suffering from is loneliness, alienation, and lack of connection. And in so much that psychedelics can help us connect more effectively with other people, I think that's like one of the key powers. And so I totally agree. If you take any kind of medicine, and then you go back to the same maybe dysfunctional, toxic or abusive relationships, you're not going to be able to maintain your healing. That being said, I think sometimes in the West, we're like a little too quick to discard our friends and families. And I think that oftentimes there is a lot of love and importance and connection there. And maybe instead of just throwing them off and finding a new group, maybe we bring everybody, you know, into this healing together. And I know that there was a time where, for example, MDMA was used for family therapy, and it helped people grow closer together. And that's what I would like to see, more of this being used to help sort of strengthen the bonds that people have. Certainly there are cases where people need to separate from abusers and so forth. But the fact of the matter is we're all flawed human beings. You're not going to find a perfect tribe. As soon as you join it, it won't be perfect anymore. So we all have to get better at connecting with each other. And I think that that's where the real difference is going to be seen. And you're not going to find that in any like pill bottle or anything. But that's sort of, the mindset of like, say, big pharma and even like most of psychiatry is, oh, I give you a medicine and that's going to help you feel better. And this is why, you know, this is why I prefer, you know, sort of the psychological therapeutic approach where we actually connect as people and work together to improve quality of life, which almost always means improving relationships.
So the medicine is not only the pill is not only the solution.
Right. Yeah. Because I think for me, you know, when I've had impactful psychedelic experiences, it's because they've given me insight about my relationships. It's because they've helped me to connect better with people that I love and helped me to see like love behind pain and why people act out in ways that are hurtful and helped me to be a better person or more accepting of them. And so for me, it's still, even though the medicine was really helpful, it still came down to the relationships. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. So it's like back to the future. It's like we're going to the roots, and that's good. We're going back to the roots, and we need the family to be healed. This is something, yes, I witnessed with my patients also when they were coming. I saw they're changing, but they're always coming back and say, but how difficult it is, because when you go home and you see your mom, your father, again, you find the same. So then I start inviting the mom and the father. So now I'm working with family. So I say, you must come with your family, or you have to get out from there, because then it's very difficult to do the change.
Yeah. I mean, and certainly, you know, there are cases, there's cases even now in my clinic where, you know, we've had people have some beautiful psychedelic experiences, go back home where they have to deal with really hurtful, abusive, dysfunctional family. And we're just like, you're not going to heal in that environment. You need to get out so you have space to get better. And then maybe when you're stronger, you can go back and help them heal too. But right now you need to go someplace where you could heal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wise words, doctor.
Yeah. And we even sometimes see the same thing too when we do psychedelic therapies with people who have their own therapists, and then we work with them. And then after we do the treatments, they go back to their own therapists. And we find sometimes they don't have as good a result because their therapists don't support their psychedelic experience, you know, the way that we do. So they start to, you know, wonder, well, what did it really mean? And was it really helpful? And I think that can be counterproductive too.
And in a scientific way, how you manage when a person in a treatment with you in the scientific way, working with the psychedelic assisted therapy, and this person's found a profound spiritual experience, what do you say? Don't believe that. That is a lie. That is an imagination. That is just a projection of your, a symbolic projection of your inner desires, and just draw it and or paint it, write it, and forget about it. How you help them to integrate this beautiful
I theory. Say that was amazing. That's so cool. That's what I say.
Great. Yeah. So you accept them only and don't talk about it.
Oh, we talk about it. Yeah. But, you know, I always accept what comes up for people, you know, unless I really think that they're seeing it in a way that is hurtful or wrong. You know, I'm pretty open to their experiences. And but usually, even if something is challenging, there's something to be learned in it, you know? But if somebody says, you know, hey, I saw Jesus, I'm like, wonderful. What did he say to you?
Do you believe in Jesus, doctor?
Do I believe in Jesus? I believe in Jesus. I do. That's how I was raised, which doesn't mean that I don't. I think all spiritual traditions have value, but that's just the one that I grew up in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I believe also in Jesus. I also was raised in Christianity. And so, doctor, one last question. Thank you for your time. Do you have more time to ask you one more question?
Okay, one more question.
Where is consciousness? Now, talking, for example, about the psychedelic field that has opened in this big question and this big bridge between science and spirituality, the word consciousness. What is consciousness and what is the limit of this consciousness? This is the we are sure that the consciousness remains in our mind, or is part of a collective field that is beyond our understanding in this moment with the tools we have?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think, you know, the kind of the common Western approach is that, you know, consciousness is like in your mind. But of course, there are people, I mean, like, for example, like Dr. Paul Groff, he'll say very clearly, consciousness is not in us. We detect consciousness, but it's the consciousness is everywhere. And I believe that, you know, the universe, I think the universe is sentient. Because if you think about it, you think about one person, we have our little tiny consciousness, and then you've got this big globe full of billions of people, and they all have consciousness. And you think about the complexity of the universe, how is it, you know, it doesn't even make sense that something so large and vast and complex would, how could that be less sophisticated than, you know, tiny person on tiny planet Earth? So I think that consciousness is a larger thing and we're all a piece of it. You know, of course, that's not something you can really scientifically prove. So I guess that's in the realm of faith. But I think it makes sense to me.
Thank you very much, Doctor, for your time, for your wisdom, for your experience, and for sharing with us. I really appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you so much for having me here. And, you know, and I appreciate and respect all the work you do. And I hope that you continue, you know, I hope that your bad experience with, you know, trying to get training here doesn't discourage you from continuing on your ongoing journey.
I will continue. No, this is my life work and I will continue for sure. So this, I say I will die doing this.
Yeah.
I will continue, and maybe we will have the possibility to know us, and I will also take in this opportunity to extend you an invitation. You are invited to my home if you want to come to Ecuador, and also you want to have some vacation. At the same time, you want to know also the work we're doing here. You are very welcome to come. You only have to send your assistant and to check your calendar, and I pick you up in the airport myself, and you're welcome to my place, and you can visit my clinic and be here.
I would love it so much.
You're welcome here, and I'm doing this invitation for you for real. So,
okay.
I will send you an invitation by email. So your assistant have me the record, and when you wish, you let us know when you have free time, and we arrange the calendar, and I pick you up at the airport myself.
All right. You're going to be my first item of business as soon as the borders open. I'm going to be off. Ecuador. I would love that so much. And thank you. And also, I want you to know that we are starting a training program at the University of Ottawa, too. In fact, we had our very first class yesterday. It was so exciting. We had about 20 graduate students and 15 undergraduate students, and we had our first day of class in Survey of Psychedelic Studies, and that's going to be the first of a big training program we're building.
You are doing training programs also? I didn't know this.
Yes. We just started. So.
And you're also accepting foreign people.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. Except the tuition is higher for foreigners at the university, which I don't have much control over that, unfortunately.
And how I see this, I didn't see any information about this. This is in Canada.
This is in Canada, yeah, because we're just starting now. So we're starting with a kind of like a micro credential. It's just 3 classes. And then, so that just started yesterday. And then we have an application in for a master's program in psychedelic studies and a certificate program for practitioners. So that's going through the approval process now at the university. But the classes that we're offering for the 3 course credential will count toward that once it's approved. So
and when is going to be open this course then for the practitioner?
That'll probably take a year before we have all the final approvals. Although we're already starting to offer classes.
And how I can get in the list of these, or so like in the waiting list. You have a waiting list or not yet?
No, we don't have a waiting list yet. We just, we just started yesterday. So, yeah.
And what's the name of the program so I can look at the webpage?
So if it's the University of Ottawa and they have there's a webpage on their Professional Development Institute that is for the 3 course credential. And we don't have anything up yet about the master's program or certificate program because it's not approved yet.
Perfect. No. But yeah, I would love to do this, both of them. Yeah. I would check it. So I will connect with you and I will be paying attention. And I also will send you this email from the invitation, the formal invitation, and you're welcome. You don't have to spend any money, only your time, only your beautiful time of life.
Thank you. I would love that so much. I would love that. All right. Well, we'll stay in touch, okay?
Yes, we will, for sure. We will still in touch. Thank you very much again for your time, Doctor. And it's a pleasure for me having you and knowing you directly. And please continue with this beautiful work you're doing and your beautiful heart, pushing forward and helping people heal this big trauma of racism.
Thank you. Talk to you later.